Right, here goes. Today I'm going to talk about a little-known protocol you might have heard of. It's called IPv4, and we've been doing some work with it for the past, about 2 decades, I think, perhaps a bit more. Most of you certainly haven't been working with it for 2 decades, and therein lies part of the problem. So, reality check. Where we are standing with IPv4 today, and where we will stand in another 2 decades, and the similarities in between there are, it's going to be very little, and we're now approaching the point where actually some changes might occur in the next couple of years. So, what is the future of IPv4? Some of you might have seen this slide before. I've been redoing it and making... Yeah, I'm in the way, of course. I'll step up on the stage. I'm not shy. But I'll have to keep on walking back and forth. But it's good for exercise, I suppose. So we are on the left-hand side with current policies. We're still eating up blocks of address space at a mighty pace. We're going to run out, and we're going to. There's some proposals out there that will see. We'll try to take care of what we're doing. And further to the right, you see that the colors become more ominous, and in the end, we'll have some problems actually turning it around and keep it working. So none of the things that we are currently discussing anywhere is going to save the world, rescue kittens from trees, cure the common cold, or even save us from doom with IPv4. Only solution is get IPv6. This is also I've tried some similes in where the problem lies, and whenever we encounter something big within the networking community, we try to refer to it as rebuilding the plane in flight. And when it comes to IPv4, I mean, we started with a little biplane, and we rebuilt it into an almighty big 787 Dreamliner, what have you. Mighty big engines, takes 5,000 people. The only problem is that the biplane had a fixed-size fuel tank. And, there actually lies in the problem. The biplane could fly on pretty much forever on that fuel tank. But the Dreamliner, 787, what have you, tends up to eat a bit more fuel. And we keep on eating more fuel. We might probably not use the Dreamliner or the 787 because they're far too good on fuel economy. Probably use an Antonov for it. And fuel is running out, and so far we've been rebuilding the plane, but running out of fuel leaves us at 30,000 feet in a chunk of steel, and gravity is starting to pull, and that's a problem. So, there has been quite a bit of discussion about this over the last about 2 years, cause of much discussion. Even culminating in this little limerick that the secret working group composed at the last Right meeting. I'm not going to recount the limerick, but you can see the picture. The actual point, what we're trying to do is we're falling to the earth. There's just one guy there, but you can imagine the plane falling down, and the only solution we've got currently is make sure that we hit the ground. By making the ground a bit lower, which is a finite exercise. We can dig our way all the way to China, but then we'll go and bounce back the other way again, so that's not going to help us a lot. So there's been a lot of talk about how bad we are on fuel, and this is the actual latest picture that I got from Jeff Houston's website. This is a lovely waterfall graph of the total IPv4 space. There's a couple of colors used here. Basically, the only good color is white. So this block here, and a few stripes on this side. And that's actually the fuel remaining. Sen, so, and the rest of it, this large block to the right is a block that we've never indicated to be used for IP addresses of hosts. Interesting. There's some blocks actually in use on the internet. There's some blocks that have been moved to one party but are not advertised. Those are the red portions. And there's some in the pool. Those are the green portions. So that are about to be assigned to people to start using them. Here are some of the chilling facts. Diana Pool currently has 41 slash H remaining. Don't know if that's still accurate. This is a number of about 2 weeks ago. Might have gone to 40 or 39 now. The world is currently using 13 slash H a year. A year or so ago, that rate was about 9. So we see some increase there. So we're bolting more engines onto the plane, if you will. Migrating the world to IPv6 is going to take at least another 5 years, and that's a fairly optimistic point of view. Address translation, as far as the ITF is concerned, does not exist. And actually, this is the only fuel extender that we might be able to use, and there is no internet standard for it. And even worse, the magic fuel converter NATPT, which you can use to magically translate IPv6 fuel into IPv4 fuel, has been abandoned. So it has been chosen not to pursue as a standard. And what's also true is that we currently don't have any standards for when the fuel tank runs out. So, of course, we've got rules, and the rules say no, go away. As you know, most of you work for a commercial organization, or even non-commercial organization. How about you go back to your boss and say no, and see how well that goes down. So there's a couple of proposals. One of them is one group of proposals called the Sunset Proposals. And what it tries to achieve is that we distribute the final amount of fuel that we've got lying around, distribute that in a fair way. So we're going to share that fuel in between the regions worldwide. Much denied by the proposers. This has, of course, a very significant political, or at least layer 8 and up, background. There is some maneuvering, particularly by the developing parts of the world, just to make sure they get their fuel on time, and really not care about their consumption rate versus the consumption rate of the Western world. What it does try is solve some potential infighting. The way it currently stands is, the last one to ask for them is the last one to get them, and you might see some trickery in trying to make some tactical moves there, which is probably not the best way to do it. And the good news is that we might possibly reach a consensus on this subject before the entire topic becomes irrelevant, because if the fuel has run out before we made the decision, the fuel has run out and there's no way to get it back. And there's another group of proposals, that's for a bit later on, and those are called the transfer proposals. And what transfer tries to do is, once we've run out of the big fuel tank, people might find some fuel left and right, some jerry cans, and might hand that back and forth to each other. We would like to do this on a global scale, on the global scale, make some policy that can be applied worldwide. But if you're interested in that, the global policy proposal and the global establishing global policy takes a while, 2 years at a minimum, realistically. So we don't have the time to do an actual global thing on this. There are now 3 proposals in 3 regions. These are also the 3 longest established regions, now in alphabetical order. APNIC, that's the Asia-Pacific region, ARIN, It's the US, North America region, and RIPE, this is the region we're in. RIPE and APNIC have a roughly similar proposal, roughly similar idea, and ARIN has a recently published a idea that's wildly different, has far more overview, and it's far more restrictive, but they're reviewing that again. So more on transfers. So what's the general idea on the transfers? It allows LIRs, that means you, the ISPs and carriers and content providers and enterprises who have a relationship with the RAR to transfer IPv4 space that you're not using, transfer them to another LIR. And the RAR doesn't intervene. You can either move it permanently or temporarily. You don't involve, the RAR is not involved with any negotiation or deal making that goes on in between those two parties. So whether you make a commercial agreement or make it a charity, or we don't care, as long as the outcome is registered with the RAR. So we do want to be keep track on what's going on and make sure that our database stays up to date so we know what IP address goes where or is supposed to go where. This is my estimate. So who's going to have these jerry cans of IPv4 address space lying around there? Who's going to be looking for them? This is my estimate, and I'm fully open to discussion on this subject. So I've made a rough separation on three users of address space. It's the ISPs and carriers, it's the content providers, and it's the enterprises. Well, the ISPs and carriers obviously have the most address space lying around, and they're going to use it up, and perhaps if the price is right, you're currently, as a, I don't know, DSL provider, you're providing, at least in the Netherlands, you provide people with a DSL subscription for about €9 a month, that sort of price, make a profit. Is that a question, Neil? Is there a microphone for Neil?
Surely governments another task to go after. NATO, all these people, they've got tons of this stuff. Let's go beat them up.
Excellent idea. Why don't you bring the army?
Yeah. We've got more important things than the army. We run the networks. Let's just turn them off.
Why don't you do that? Okay. Good. Excellent. So government, of course, as a fourth party, but as we're talking about markets, I'm trying to not involve governments there. So perhaps, if there's more value in selling your address space rather than using it yourself, you might sell it. Content providers will continuously keep looking for more IP addresses. Patrick needs to build ever more clusters, so he needs to have more IP addresses for it. He might become very creative in how he uses them. Probably. Okay.
Since you had to mention us, two things. One, we actually only have 30,000 servers at two IP addresses each, so a /16 is more than enough theoretically. But one of the biggest problems we're seeing is this little standard called SSL, which you may have heard of. So while theoretically every Akamai server in the world could go into a /16 or a /15, we have a single rack with like /19s in them because they have thousands of SSL certifications. So if you could change that, then, which is actually possible to do and possible to do in the time frame we're talking about, it could actually make a huge dent in what you're talking about.
I agree, and there will be a point, future wisdom and alien technology in my presentation, and we might actually use it there. I think that's a good idea. Content providers will need IPv4 addresses until every last end user has moved onto IPv6, so that'll be a while, if ever. And enterprises, some of the enterprises are sitting on some pretty old and large blocks, and they might, which they're not using, and they might sell it if the price is right. So who wants to acquire? ISPs and carriers will definitely want to acquire because they want to expand their business. But the blocks that they need are so bloody large that it's very unlikely for them to find any available. They're using it by the boatload, and we're only looking for jerrycans right now. So content will definitely be looking for some more address space, and enterprises potentially. You can still see an influx of enterprise or enterprise-like organizations becoming member of the RARs to set up a more independent network. Rob?
On your who will want to acquire, I think there is an important fourth bullet point, and that is newcomers.
There can be newcomers in any three categories, and there might even evolve a fourth category that I'm unaware of, absolutely.
Yeah, I think it is worthwhile mentioning newcomers, people who we don't know yet, because in all the discussions in the last two or three years, it has been brought up that especially in the in Africa and Latin America, that is an important element in their worries about how the end game takes place.
And I agree. In one of my earlier presentations, one of the examples I gave is, what if I were to set up Akamai 2, in 2018, where will I get my IPv4 addresses from, because I will definitely need them? That's going to be very interesting. So, future wisdom. Here we go, Patrick. So the current rate that we're using of IPv4 address space, even if we found a completely new fuel tank, we'd run out again in a decade. That's going to be no good. We could unabandon NATPT. Don't think we've done that a whole lot before, unabandoned proposed standards. We could do something smart with what's called 240/4. And I'll go back to... this is not right. And 240/4 for the less IPv4 savvy under you is the right-hand side of this purple bit, which is currently completely unusable address space, and it's unusable because every device in the world thinks that this is not host address space. Might become usable for people who have a walled garden network and control every single device and every single operating system and every firmware in that network, and make that usable. Neil, is that a question yet?
So not really a question, but I wouldn't count 240/4 as not in use, because it is in use.
240/4 is not in use.
Sorry, 224/4 is. 224,
but that's not the one. So multicast is and will remain multicast forever and ever. But we're talking about the block after multicast. That's still 16/8s. That's the consumption. We could go a bit over a year on that if it were to magically turn into unicast, and all the boxes in the world would magically understand that. Andy.
Yep. We did some
work. Who are you, Andy?
Oh, I'm Andy Davidson. We did some work August last year with Paul Wilson, David Conrad, and a number of other people. And we said, what exactly do we need to do to start using 240/4? Because you know, at the end of the day, we actually produced a draft with an excerpt of what you needed to do to patch FreeBSD, for example, to make it work. And it's a couple of lines. It's about 13 bytes. Of patch that would make 240/4 usable in that operating system, and we thought that that it's possible that we can do this. But when we looked at this, we worked out that it would buy us another few months of V4.
About a year at the outside.
So we'd have thrown a lot of effort and required a lot of people to upgrade to get a few months out of IPv4. So the message is, you've got to start using IPv6. We can't rely on false hope, sadly.
Exactly.
Got to do some work.
Yeah.
Well, the other point of that, of course, is even if you didn't reach, say, 10% of the hosts, that's 10% of the hosts that can't reach whatever services are running there, and no provider is going to want 10% of the customers to randomly not be able to see their content.
Absolutely. So that's the major hurdle for using that in any global context, is that there will be boxes with embedded IPv4 in their firmware somewhere. Some printers, you never know, DSL routers, that won't be able to use it.
Timothy Clark, the cloud. I'll add on top of that you've got still some home users using Windows 3.1, 3.11, really old versions of operating systems that, because they've been there for so long already, they simply will not get patched because they've been end of life for years.
I'll raise you with my LazyJet 3SI from 1991 and see how that goes. Thank you. Comes to questions, I'd like to, there's a couple of people I'd like to thank for the data in this presentation: Jeff Houston, Leo Vigoda, Jessica Hagee, E. Horn, Jay Cornell, who provided me with some graphics, and of course the Secret Working Group. And I'll leave you with this final thought.